Well, Sisab, starting off with Buzz Week, you know, we very often we try and alert the listeners to different scams, whether it's online scams, banking scams, etc. And a very common scam is also the cell phone scam. So we do believe and understand that there's a new cell phone scam that is around, the need to report unusual activity. This will obviously help us.
Yes, most definitely, Morana. You know, the Wireless Application Service Providers Association, abbreviated as WASPA, right? They have uncovered a new cell phone scam where South African mobile users are secretly subscribed to a paid-for adult service. Now, what this means is that all that happens is a person would be visiting, let's say, News24, a neutral website of some sort, and you would click on a link, and in the process, what would happen is there would be a page to sign up for this paid-for service, adult service, and it costs, according to the report I've been looking at, 5 rand a day is the cost of the subscription to this service, which you're not even intending to subscribe to. So you're visiting this link, this neutral link, let's assume it's a news website, and that link is secretly or in the background of your computer system is basically going through a page and is clicking your agreeing to signing up for the service. Now, the first time a consumer would become aware of subscribing to the service is after 5 rand has been billed to their account, and when you receive an SMS welcoming yourself to the subscription service and saying, welcome to so-and-so adult world and so forth, and you would carry on, you know. So the it does appear that, and this is quite disappointing in the sense that, according to this report I've been looking at, the mobile network providers, the finger is being pointed to them in terms of allowing the information of consumers to be made available to third-party websites. This is obviously a disappointing thing, and it's not something we expect from mobile network providers, but according to this report by WASPA, the Wireless Application Service Providers Association, it does seem like the information is being made available to third parties by mobile network providers. Now, for consumers who do suspect any kind of odd behavior in terms of cell phone messages that you're receiving or different kinds of instant messages that you're receiving, one is to report it as spam if a person is on WhatsApp. If it's an ordinary SMS, then the best bet is to use the Wireless Application Service Providers Association. They do have quite an efficient website, and I can give that to you immediately, Morana. The website is www.waspa.org.za, and there is a page for lodging of complaints and so forth in terms of consumer support. If I just look at the consumer support itself, that page alone has got quite a few beneficial links, whether it's direct marketing that you're being subjected to, or you're losing airtime and you just can't understand why you're losing airtime so rapidly without even having made calls or sent SMSs. If you want any kind of to report any unwanted billing kind of issues, WASPA is the place to go.
Okay, Jazakallah for that, Muftisab. So it's www.waspa.org.za. That is the website that you can go to if you want to report these unusual activities on or billings on your phone, on linkings that they have linked you to sites that you probably don't want to go to. The best steps to take when loan repayments become difficult.
Marana, you know, it goes without saying that things are becoming increasingly difficult from a financial perspective as the days go by, with price increases and interest rate hikes and the like of in the world of finance and economics. So the advice is aimed at those who have not yet defaulted on any kind of repayments. So anyone who is involved in a loan of some sort, and let's assume it's with a financial institution, and you haven't yet defaulted. It's coming there. You're heading that way, but you haven't yet defaulted on repayments on that given loan. The other options are all exhausted, whether it's savings, maybe some individuals have a tendency of tapping into their overdraft, which is a Sharia problem. Some individuals tap into their home loans again for excess funding, and that is also a problem from a Sharia perspective. But be that as it may, these are the usual conventional options that people adopt when it comes to trying to get some cash or liquid to settle their loans. Now, many a time when it comes to individuals who are falling on hard times and finding difficulty in settling their debt, the first recourse is to start panicking. And when they are contacted by the financial institutions or debt collectors for that matter, the first response is to just avoid and don't avoid all contact. You know, don't pick up the phone, or if you do pick up the phone, just lie about who's speaking on the side. You know, so that kind of thing is the first response, which is a very human response. But the honesty, the reality is that it makes things worse, because when you think about credit providers, whenever a corporation or financial institution does provide credit, repossessing of the item is actually the last resort. And I say this because repossessing itself is quite an expensive exercise for financial institutions. It does involve tremendous administrative costs. So keep in mind as consumers that financial institutions, for them, the last resort is to repossess furniture or a motor vehicle or even a house for that matter. There are huge expenses involved. Therefore, the first thing, in terms of the best steps to take when it comes to loan repayments becoming difficult, the first thing is to be very realistic in terms of maybe drawing up a kind of a budget of some sort, because the budget does, drawing up an honest budget does reveal that you are making some kind of effort to pay and you are keen to make payment. Don't expect that you're going to contact the financial institution and say, you know what, I can't afford the payment anymore, and make a plan for me. They're not going to just make a plan for someone. You're going to have to show that you are willing to make sacrifices and even reduce your expenses. Also keep in mind, in terms of drawing up that budget, to short pay on any installment. If the installment is 3,000 rand and you only decide to pay 1,000 rand in, it's not doing any good. It's actually making things worse because of the method in which the interest is piled onto that remaining balance. So I'm not going to go into the details. All I want to say is the first step in when it comes to having fallen on hard times is to draw up an honest budget, which is realistic and something that an individual can expect. So if I give you a simple example, like I think last week we talked about reducing your vehicle costs. Assuming you have a tracking device on your vehicle and your tracking contract is over the more than 3 years, you qualify for a cheaper rate in terms of that tracking device. Mm-hmm. Contact your company service provider and get that fee reduced, you know. Mm. So take action where the first thing is to drop an honest budget. The second one is to take action where it's possible. So example, tracking device, if you can qualify some kind of small discount, some kind of repayments on the vehicle can be rearranged, maybe that kind of thing is an option. Also maybe the aspect of closing retail accounts, you know, this is something which is very relevant and prevailing in the community, in the sense that people tend to have all these different retail accounts, one with Edgar's, one with Woolworths, one with that and you know, so and so corporation, or clothing retailers or shoe retailers. You know, you've got all these different accounts, and these pile up at the end of the day. The last one, which is important, the last step, which is very important, is the aspect of cell phones. You know, there's no doubt that having a cell phone has become quite an expense in, by and large, most households. Just about every household, I would say, having a cell phone has become quite an expensive affair on its own. So if one has fallen on hard times, it may not be necessary to upgrade contract every 2 years. You don't have to do that. One can even downgrade. It's also fine. It's also acceptable, and it does not make an individual smaller if one were to downgrade a mobile telephone contract. Rather than having a smartphone, maybe something more basic which you can live with, you know, and just be accessible to people. That's all. You don't have to have all the other frills that come with a mobile telephone. But in short, Marana, I would suffice to say that the last tool which is of extreme benefit to consumers is, before defaulting on any loan, make an effort to rather visit the financial institution or the credit provider. Discuss the matter. It will go a long way in terms of alleviating the difficulty. Many individuals tend to assume that if I go in, they won't do anything, they will just be very difficult with me. It's not always the case. You could be in for a surprise here. They could make some kind of special arrangement for an individual to accommodate their circumstances.
It's really, truly amazing, you know, if you really cut down on these things. And it's very important to save. It's very important to learn how to save also. I remember, I think it was yesterday, where I went through one article on one of the news websites, where they heard about this person that saves. I think it's probably a lady. She says that even though we, you know, economically things have become so much more expensive, but I'm still managing to save my goal of 33% of my salary. Now that's, I mean, a staggering amount, you know. That's a third of your entire salary that you're managing to save. Now, everybody's situation might be different. This lady, she's married and husband could be taking care of a lot of the other things. But just the fact that they are able to save is a very good thing, and it's a very important thing as well. And you know, the most important thing is you need to have the will to save, and if you really want to, then there's a lot of things that you can cut down on. As Mufti Saab spoke of the cell phones also, you know, that the latest phone, and then with that phone you've got to get it on contract, and then you need data on the phone and airtime on the phone, and sometimes it just comes up to too much.
Too much, Monana. Yes, definitely. So, at the end of the day, it boils down to making sacrifices, Monana. There are those individual scenarios of individuals who are saving, but for purposes of economics and finance terms, the proportion of saving is important, and the scale at which saving is happening in individual households is what becomes very important in terms of contributing to the economy itself.
Okay, Mufti Saab, tell us, speaking about savings, the misgivings about tax-free savings accounts.
Manana, this one is something very interesting and but difficult to address, in the sense that by and large most of us are aware of the fact that tax-free savings accounts have been launched in the country about 18 months ago, maybe more than that. And I suppose the difficult part is that for those who do choose to be involved in tax-free savings accounts, the first aspect we need, first box we need to tick, is that the tax-free savings accounts are Sharia compliant. It goes without saying, right? Mm-hmm. But be that as it may, I found it very interesting that Sanlam carried out a survey recently in which 400 people were required to fill out a form in terms of their involvement or non-involvement, just individuals, whether they were involved in tax-free savings accounts or not. These 400 individuals were selected. And of those 400, 255 people who didn't actually know what their accounts were all about. In fact, according to the survey, only two individuals out of 400, only two individuals could correctly identify all the myths or misgivings and facts about tax-free savings accounts that were presented to them on the questionnaire. Imagine, only two individuals out of 400 were able to understand what financial product they had been involved in. Now, that's an indication of what kind of misgivings are out there in terms of tax-free savings accounts. I'm just going to touch on a few which appeared in the print media in the last week. The first one is that there's a myth that there's no limit to how much a person can invest. Keep in mind, this is a myth. There are limits. There are two kinds of limits. The one is the limit in terms of annually, a person can only contribute a maximum of 30,000 rand or 2,500 rand a month in a 12-month cycle. So there's one limit, which is the annual limit. And then you have a lifetime limit, which is that of 500,000 rand over a lifetime, which means that it will take a person 16 years to reach the lifetime limit if you contribute 30,000 rand a year. Right? So the two limits. One is the annual limit and one is the lifetime limit. These two limits need to be considered. So in short, there are limits in terms of how much can be invested. Number two, the second myth, is that the contributions that a person makes, those are tax deductible. People tend to believe that if I contribute 30,000 rand a year, the 30,000 rand itself is tax deductible. This is incorrect. In terms of the law or the current rules relating to tax-free savings accounts, only the growth on the savings is that's the only area where the tax benefit lies. The tax benefit does not lie in what amount is actually put into the contribution, to the investment. It's only on the growth on that investment where the tax benefit lies. And that's an important aspect for individuals to keep in mind. And then there's another myth or misgiving that tax-free savings accounts are only available or only sold by a banking institution. This is not necessarily the case. In fact, there are quite a few financial corporations who have come on and are offering it as part of their bouquet of products. So you'll find even life insurance companies offering a tax-free savings account. In fact, at the moment, there are approximately 27 providers of tax-free savings accounts, and this is in itself quite staggering. So it's not only banks; it can be other institutions as well. And then the other misgiving is that you can only have one tax-free account. this is incorrect. An individual is allowed to have a number of tax-free savings accounts. However, the total contributions to all of them cannot exceed 30,000 rand per year or 500,000 rand in one's lifetime. So just keep that in mind. In terms of individual tax-free accounts, there can be more than one. It is allowed in terms of the law. And then the important one is the aspect of investment costs. Many a time when we hear about tax-free savings accounts, our understanding tends to be that after I invest, there will be no fees for the investment itself. I'll just give my, let's say, my 30,000 rand for the year. That's all that's involved in terms of the pinch on my pocket. Keep in mind, there are investment costs. There's no investment which is for free. So there will be costs, and one would have to ascertain whichever institution you're going with, what kind of fees do they charge for taking out a tax-free savings account with them. Obviously, according to the law, the provider of the tax-free savings account cannot charge performance fees. They can't say that if this investment performs according to this pattern, then this is how much we will charge, and if it underperforms, then we will charge you a bit less. They cannot do that. That is basically not allowed. However, they are allowed to charge penalties for early withdrawal. In short, Morana, I just want to say that myth that there are investment costs. Be prepared and weigh those costs when in getting involved with any financial institution. And then the other aspect is the aspect of, this is the final myth and misgiving, that withdrawals, you can only make a withdrawal only after a specific period. This is a misgiving and a misunderstanding. One of the important aspects to keep in mind with regard to tax-free savings accounts is that the savings have to be accessible to an individual. Therefore, there are no real limits in terms of or restrictions in terms of accessing one's funds. If an individual has invested, let's say, 4 months into the time and into the period and requires some of the funding, it is possible to access some of those funds. So those are just a few myths. There are many others, I suppose. I mean, the one of converting an existing investment into a tax-free savings account, that's another myth, which I will not go into too much detail on. I hope that will suffice in terms of highlighting some of the misgivings regarding consumer understanding of tax-free savings accounts.
Okay, Jazakallah Mufsab, that did enlighten us quite a bit on the misgivings or the myths regarding tax-free savings accounts, and it's very interesting that we should be aware of this, we should know about this. As Muftisab gave the statistics there, from about 400 people, only two really knew the details of this account that they have. Herbalife in the news.
Marana, Herbalife, what can I say? I do understand many individuals will probably be involved in reselling of Herbalife products. What I'm going to do is not speak from myself. I'm going to read out an article which appeared in the Los Angeles Times. I'm not going to read the full article. I'm just going to read a few paragraphs very quickly, Marana, if you'll allow me.
Okay, no problem.
The article is first of all appeared online on the website of Los Angeles Times. And this is how it goes. It says Herbalife Limited agreed on Friday to pay $200 million and change its business practices to settle federal regulators' claims that it falsely told people that they could quickly get rich by selling its weight loss shakes, teas, and other supplements. The Federal Trade Commission issued a stinging rebuke of the Los Angeles-based company's business model, saying it is compliant, saying in its complaint that Herbalife had misled people into becoming its distributors or its members with videos and brochures showing mansions, fancy cars, and boats, and telling them that they could quit their jobs. Now, the overwhelming majority of distributors earn little or no money, the government said, and many have lost thousands of dollars after being encouraged to lease space to set up nutrition clubs where people pay a daily fee to drink a protein shake and tea. The company, which had revenues of $4.47 billion last year, said on Friday that it disagreed with many of the Federal Trade Commission's allegations, but had decided to settle to avoid the financial cost and distraction of protracted litigation. Herbalife said that it had also agreed to pay $3 million to settle an investigation by the Illinois Attorney General's office to settle two settlements on its own, resolve all active investigations against Herbalife, according to the company. So, from what I see, Mulana, the settlements are an acknowledgement that the business model is sound according to the company, and it underscores the confidence and ability to move forward very successfully. I just want to continue reading from the article itself, and it just says here that the Federal Trade Commission's investigation began in March 2014 after a billionaire claimed that Herbalife was operating a pyramid scheme. So the Federal Trade Commission charged the company's compensation system as being unfair because distributors were rewarded more for recruiting others to join and purchase products than they were for selling products as a result of actual demand for them. The agency said Herbalife must change its system so that at least two-thirds of the rewards were based on retail sales of products that were tracked and verified. The Federal Trade Commission said that at least 80% of sales must be to legitimate end users or the current compensation must be reduced. So the article is much longer, and I'll not go into all of the details, but it does bring into some kind of light that Herbalife is in the news. And the final line on the article just says that the settlement applies only to Herbalife's sales in the U.S. or about 20% of its global operations. So it does going to impact on the South African operations to some extent, given that it is an international corporation listed on some of the international stock exchanges.
Okay, finally, Mr. Sir, tell us an expense that cash-strapped South Africans are overlooking.
What can I say? There was a survey conducted by Old Mutual, and according to the survey by Old Mutual, it does appear that consumers are making budget cuts amid a struggling economy and high inflation. When it comes to these, obviously, it goes without saying. The first thing that people are letting go of is luxury costs like holidays, eating out, maybe entertainment. To some extent, some individuals may be going a bit down the list and maybe cutting out some kind of education for the children, you know, just minimizing the cost in terms of education itself. But the one cost which individuals are overlooking is the cost of pet food. And in the specific example of the article I was looking at, the cost of dog food specifically. According to Retail Price Watch, the price of pet food has increased as much as 60% over the past year. Obviously, depending on the brand, and according to this article, and a statistic is given here that an 8-kilogram bag of Pedigree has increased by more than 57% on average since June or July last year. According to most veterinarians, dogs or pets in general are still enjoying the best brands available despite the economic decline in many households. So it is an expense which needs to be considered. If an individual is about to fall on hard times, one would need to consider whether you really want to be keeping a pet or not.
See, very important, because most of, if you are keeping the pet, then you got to feed the animal. I'm not too familiar with the different brands, etc. Whichever brand it is, you got to still look after the animal. You got to still feed the animal, and if you're not doing that properly, then you could be taken to task.
Most definitely. I mean, the categoric hadith of Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam referring to individuals who have not looked after animals. I think what's concerning is that we don't regard it as an expense. We might be looking at cutting expenses on different fronts in our individual budgets, but when it comes to maintaining of a pet, there tends to be some kind of negligence there in terms of cutting costs.
Cheap, and for some people this might be very difficult, you know, because some people are very passionate about the pets that they have.
Most definitely, people have the individual blogs on a daily or even weekly basis, just updating people only about their cats, nothing else.
They regard it to be part of the family, and they'll say, what you're trying to say, I mustn't feed my family. Okay, so that brings us to the conclusion of the section, the segment on BizWeek. We're going to now go for an ad break. After the ad break, we will be back. Stay tuned. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. We welcome you back to the Tajir program on Radio Islam International. There's 15 minutes left for the program. That is before the hour of 10. We do remind you, if you have any queries, if it is business, economics, finance related, you can call us on 011-854-1548. Alternatively, you could message us on 060-988-3972. We now move on to the second segment of our program, The Muslim Trader.
The Muslim Trader on the Tajir Hour with Mufti Muhammad Hafiji.
Mufti Sahib, speaking of The Muslim Trader this week, maybe we could take a look at pitfalls to avoid when changing careers or jobs.
Yes, Maulana, this is also an important part of ethics when it comes to the Muslim trader and the Muslim economic unit out in the world of business and finance. You know, many a time when it comes to the choice of work or choice of a career, I don't like to use the word career, but for what it means and for what it normally implies, we are using it in that context. Many a time individuals would tend to choose a specific path of work, and the decision is made as early is sometimes being in school. You know, sometimes in some cases the decision is made and a person is in high school sometime, that decision at that point in one's life tends to be sometimes it's the individual himself or herself making the decision. In other cases, there are parents who influence the decision very strongly, and or even peers. You know, maybe one's teachers or mentors or whatever it is. And the decision is taken innocently and with passion at that point in time. And then when the individual arrives at the workplace, starts working 2 years, 3 years, you find that the individual starts to lose passion or the drive to remain in that specific profession. And the realization manifests itself in different ways. Sometimes there's this constant, you know, maybe difficulty getting out of bed, not participating fully at work, maybe even some kind of depression setting in when it comes to being able to achieve and remain confident in one's profession. So I suppose there are a few pitfalls that we often confront and see when it comes to individuals who do end up changing a workplace scenario or even a profession for that matter. And I'm just going to touch on a few of them which I've discovered in recent months. One of them is the aspect of individuals tending to switch their work scenario or even their career, their profession without a proper plan. You know, the switch is going to be a major shift, and a plan needs to obviously be in place. There are numerous components to that plan, and obviously time does not allow us to go into all of those components, but with a broad stroke, I'm just saying that it's important to have a plan in terms of what an individual wants to do, rather than being bogged down by the depression or those negative thoughts about being in that profession. Rather be positive and maintain some kind of dignity with oneself and honesty with oneself to plan and make a chalk out a path of moving over some kind of transition from one profession to another. The second important aspect is that many a time we find individuals wanting to, this is unethical to change a career or change a profession because a person hates their job. You know, many a time you'll find people saying, I don't like my work, you know. Yes, you don't like your work, but the change should not be motivated by the fact that you don't like your work. It's possible that you're not liking the work because the work environment may not be that good. Or the people at work are people that you can't live with and tolerate. But it doesn't necessarily mean the profession itself is bad. So you could maybe remain in that profession. It's just you've got to change your scenario or your settings, the environment or the kind of friends or individuals you associate with. That's important to keep in mind. And the more ethical thing to do is to remain in that profession, master that individual or specific profession, and revive that fulfillment that was once there in terms of being in that profession. So it goes without saying that the motivation to change a workplace scenario shouldn't be motivated by the fact that the financial aspect is not good at the current place, so now we need to move somewhere else, you know, or this profession is not paying well enough, so I need to move somewhere else. Payment or financial matters is not the, or sometimes even in the case of leave alone financial affairs, sometimes the person perceives that their status is not being recognized in this profession. So let me move to another profession where I'll enjoy a better status, you know. So the status or even financial matters should not be the motivations for an individual changing a course of the individual profession. One should look at the matter very realistically and find or innovate ways of creating some kind of passion or even some kind of vigor in terms of the profession an individual is involved in. There's one other pitfall which often tends to manifest itself is that when individuals do decide to change from one profession to another, they tend to not embrace the fact that they might need additional qualifications for another profession. You know, sometimes a different set of qualifications are required for that new profession, and a person cannot just shift into that new profession without the given qualifications. So part of that plan which I referred to early on would be to say, okay, I've got a year at my disposal before I want to move into my desired new profession. What can I do in this year to uplift myself and to prepare myself for the new profession so that I can deliver adequately? That plan is should also incorporate what kind of qualifications are necessary to adapt and to adapt, to move into a new profession. The other aspect is the aspect of when moving into a new profession, it is almost a given that a person would have to begin from the very bottom. And at an entry level, a person should not expect to be one of the most highest paid employees after moving into a new profession. It's most likely going to be the case where a person would have to sustain some kind of knock in terms of the kind of compensation that they get into when it comes to shifting into a new career. It doesn't just happen that a person will enjoy the best of benefits when it comes to that new career. So that's important to keep in mind in terms of shifting into a new career or new profession for that matter. The last pitfall which tends to manifest itself is that many a time when it comes to that aspect of qualifications, obtaining new qualifications, there are individuals who tend to overlook the fact that they do not have the ability to acquire the necessary skills on a full-time basis. So let's say you're in one profession, you're not happy here, you have a year at your disposal to move into another profession, but in this year you cannot possibly commit to any full-time study. You cannot, because you're currently in your current profession, it has its own kind of demands. So in that case, an individual would need to look at maybe other study options, and you'll be surprised how much of opportunities there are out there in terms of the online platforms that can be used for short courses, which save time and also money. They are a bit costly, but they tend to be the delivery on these online platforms is beginning to improve. So the definition of new learning is not only going to be restricted to going to a place or to a university or college. It is possible for an individual to improve their skill set by adopting these online platforms after having obviously researched them thoroughly. These are just a few pitfalls which I've just identified on a random basis, Molana, and I hope they can help some individual in terms of what is required when it comes to changing a profession from one which is not fulfilling to another one which is much more fulfilling. Obviously, the assistance of experts, counselors maybe would be required, psychologists would be required. These are necessary tools to adopt together with turning to Allah Ta'ala. You know, before you do anything else, one needs to turn to Allah Ta'ala. It does not mean we're mentioning it last, that it should come in the list as last. You know, it should maybe be the first thing that a person should turn to when it comes to wanting to change a profession of any sort.
Sure, Mufti Sahib, undoubtedly these are very pertinent points that you did highlight for us. And as Mufti Sahib said, I think the very important one is obviously the one of turning to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and making mashura also, you know, is something very important. As you did say, that we need to contact or we need to speak to the professionals at making mashura with different people. You know, if you're leaving a career, going into a different job, and from the outside, many times, sometimes different jobs, different careers, you know, they might look a bit more tempting, etc., from the outside. But once you get inside, it could be, you know what they say, a different ball game. It could be something that you didn't expect it to be, and sometimes you then end up the loser on both sides, because now you left where you were, you had something going there, but you left it for something better, greener pastures, but unfortunately it's not so green for you, it's not really working out for you. And I think very important what Mufti Sahib did highlight is also the fact that you know, you got to do things that make you happy. You can't only just look, obviously we need to survive, we don't live on air, each person requires a certain salary and each person's needs are different, but you know, it's not only about the money at the end of the day, it's what makes you happy as well. You might be getting a high salary, but you're not looking forward to going to work, you're not happy at work, you know, that brings you down. Causes you know, you don't feel happy, you become sulky and moody, then I think those are things that we need to look at as well.
Most definitely, Moana. And just from my side, Moana, when it comes to being in any profession, whether it is a profession of the corporate workplace or medical, it can be any of the arts, engineering, or even the profession of an imam or the profession of an Islamic scholar. It, in any profession, it goes without saying that it's not what the profession does to a person, it's what the person does to the profession. A person has to adapt the profession itself for in such a way that you use it for your own benefit. You don't expect that the profession will give you something. You know, many individuals who go into any profession with the mindset that this profession will give me status, the profession will give me wealth, they tend to be disappointed. Maybe not in the short term. They might see the expected gains of status or even financial gain in the short term, but in later years, the research has shown that those individuals tend to land up in the later years, and I'm referring to like 50 plus, they start seeing the effects of on their mental condition. So it does tend to catch up with a person if the expectations are wrong. One should never ever approach a profession of any sort with a mindset of what is this profession going to do to me. It's more about what I can do for this profession. How can I add value to this profession? And not only the profession, but use the profession as a tool to add value to the lives of people.
Well, certainly, Mustafa, JazakAllah for that very beautiful discussion. I see there's just 3 minutes left. We have one more segment. Should we take it or should we drop it?
Maulana, we needed to just wrap up last week's discussion in terms of the aspect of some of those rare occurrences in terms of a hadith where Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam refers to some forms of justification for levying of fees for rendering Islamic services. There are some scenarios which I would like to go into quickly, but I won't do that now. The reason being that there are at least 4 scenarios which I've been able to detect in terms of hadith literature where many of us would not associate those as Islamic services that fees are required to be, or there is a legitimate reason for levying of fees. But they are mentioned in hadith, and we would not associate what the key lesson that needs to be derived, and I'll touch on that maybe next week, is the fact that the hadith literature is so vast. It does, those 4 examples that I want to look at demonstrate how vast the hadith literature is in terms of a specific area of our commercial lives where specific services are rendered and the service provider is allowed to levy a fee, and the consumer or user of that service cannot say that this is an Islamic duty of yours and you cannot charge me a fee and hence I'm not paying anything, or I'm paying you last from my list of debtors, you know, or creditors, so to say. So I would prefer to maybe go into those examples next week, inshallah.
Okay, we'll inshallah keep it for next week. Our apologies, I think the program ran a bit late, and hopefully inshallah next week we'll be able to cover it.
Inshallah, most definitely. Inshallah, may Allah Ta'ala accept what has been talked about and make it beneficial for myself, yourself, and our listeners, inshallah.
Okay, JazakAllah Muftijab, may Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala reward you in abundance as well.
Ameen.
JazakAllah to the listeners. For that, we conclude this week's program of Atajir. JazakAllah to our engineer as well, Brother Ziad. From our side, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.